I'd rather to see it in a census form. And the end goal would be to create income guidelines, which most of these programs that spoke today follow income guidelines, but strangely enough, it could be a state or a federal, and they're all different. And you talk about trying to get below that. I will give credit to Director Kimball in looking at that. How can we better ensure with our own deductions or standards to get our folks underneath that guideline? Because it's not ours. It's not our Osage Nation income guideline. And that would be a goal that we've talked about for years to try to get in place. Because I'm just speaking for myself as a congressperson, to be fiscally responsible, I believe things should be based off a need. Just with what Director Davis was saying, he made some good points. We're sitting here assuming everybody needs commodities, but he's saying, look at our economy that we've created. And all these things are big factors. And, but I did have some questions with regards to your 477. A couple of things, you know, are you thinking about doing the youth program year round this year?
Yes, we surveyed the students, or surveyed the youth, and gave them the option to tell us what would be more convenient for them. It was pretty close and pretty tight. So I think this year we're gonna try a hybrid and let them, you know, come in and offer that all year round, but not make it mandatory. So if they choose to participate in the youth, they have that flexibility, or if they are a youth that wants to participate year round, we have that flexibility. We're trying to also be mindful of the admin burden to watch those clients all year round instead of right there in the summer, because you'll see there's several different funding streams here. So one staff is pulled several different ways, but we're gonna try a hybrid this year.
Okay, good, and thank you. And I was also wondering, have you seen an increase in your caregivers through TANF?
We have seen an increase in caregivers on TANF, and typically they're grandparents taking care of their grandchildren, you know, for whatever reason, yeah.
And I was wondering, because I had heard or read a study about that right now, that's where we are. A lot of grandparents are raising their grandchildren. Right. And so I'm always trying to tell them about our TANF program, that we have caregiver assistance for that. And so, and then I know back in the day, we actually paid a stipend to our participants to attend VOTEC. We paid them to go to school. And the reason we did that was so that we could see that they'd start something and finish it.
Right.
And because a lot of them cannot go because they can't afford the gas. And they couldn't afford to, you know, wait. But if we incentivize them and added value to the full project, then we saw that return of graduates and certificates. And I believe that it was a successful program. And that, look, I feel like the best programs that we can develop is when Congress members speak to the executive branch, when we offer a direct assistance, because right now we don't have a census, we don't know. So how can you make that better? And I always try to go to the experts that are actually handling these programs. I would have loved to see, you know, the career tech have discussion with financial assistance and education. I mean, you'd be surprised what you learn in those discussions. Is it mandatory? No. Is it a requirement? Most certainly not. But if you really want to do what's best for the people, and that's available to you to reach out, I just feel like it's always the best pathway to help serve our people.
I agree.
Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I just have a comment. This, you know, we have wonderful programs and wonderful employees that have worked on developing these programs. But this one is especially one of my favorites, because it has not just a start and an end, it has an end goal that changes the life of people. And so I'm assuming it's still on the five-year turnaround. That's when you run out of benefit, is at the end of 5 years. So it's a degree or a work or whatever you've got. This was developed back in, and I can't think of the years, but it was back in the Clinton administration. And it was developed for that, to get people away from welfare roles and into a life change. And that's why I've always been really, just really interested in it. And the fact that it's operated, I'm assuming still operated, by HR and not, I mean, HR-driven people rather than so much social workers. Mm-hmm. That it's people who are no career development, I can't think of the degree that a lot of them were always going after, but it had to do with human resources, mm-hmm. a human resources degree. And I just think that that is such an optimistic mm-hmm. thing, rather than here you're down and out, let's help you, it's here. Mm-hmm. Let's get you to a new level. So,
yes, anyway, ma'am.
I just appreciate it.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Congresswoman Stabler, because I'm actually a poster child for that program. I am. I received the stipend. Raymond Lastly was a director, and R.E.R. Burrow was in there, and there was one more. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I needed to buy scrubs. I had to buy a certain type of scrub for the nursing program that I was in, and I had caretaker assistants, and I had to have my instructors sign a weekly piece of paper. I can remember having them sign it each week, and so that I could get paid to go to school, because we didn't have the scholarship that we do now. And of course, I qualified for Pell and financial aid, and our people up here helped me with it. But I wasn't ashamed either. You know, I wasn't ashamed to come up there and get the assistance that I needed. And I did it, and I'm proof right here that you can do it. And I didn't start the program until I was in my late 20s. That's when I started the program. And we did have it. I was like, oh, I only have 5 years. I was like, I got to get this done, because I'm not going to have that source of funding to help me. And so I wouldn't be here today, like I said, if I hadn't utilized that particular portion of it. So do they still do the stipend to?
Yes,
they do.
Yes. With the majority of our students are receiving a stipend. So that is our way to ensure they make it to class every day, they've got enough money to get there and back, and then they get an incentive when they complete and get those certifications, you know. And the five-year term that y'all are referring to is for TANF.
I was on that,
For a TANF benefit only, and that is the state's limit. The Osage Nation has a limit of 4. We felt probably 2 years ago that 5 years is too long. I mean, if it's taken somebody 5 years on TANF, somebody's not doing their job. So we shortened that to 4, but that is just for one component of this plan, and that's only for the welfare cash payment. Otherwise, they're still in work experience, career development, they're in class, they're in training, they're on the job training. We have on the job training contracts executed with outside of the nation as well, some with Osage business owners, you know, to put our adults there. So we've seen a lot of success. We're really proud of it.
And if you guys remember, on her 477, that's funny, we call it that for years since inception, I think. But it's a public law. 477 is a public law. And but it's self-governance dollars. And so we're able to create and develop a 477 plan that meets the needs of our people. And I think that's part of the self-governance dollars that I really like, because we're able to say, yeah, that may work over there, but for us, this is what works. And so I'm really proud. It takes a certain type of team to understand self-governance and all the things that you can do, especially with the first time I think we met with a treasurer controller and said we could commingle. They were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And they're like, no, this is on. The public law says that you can do that. So is there any action from anybody on her 477?
And just another comment, if you will. The public law is also still going under changes. So there's at the federal level, there's a drive for an MOA between the 12 funding agencies. And I just attended a meeting yesterday for that tribal work group. So tribes meet with their federal partners and they discuss public law 102-477 and its intended purposes. So they have, at the federal level, they've approved to put other funding streams, allow other funding streams into this plan if you choose to. And we've weighed out some of those pros and cons. What would this do to our, you know, our constituency if we included LIHEAP, which is another bill we'll talk about, and the community services block grant. And we see a lot of advantages, you know, for our people. However, we're choosing to wait. I thought you would ask this question, but so I was prepared to answer it. We're choosing to wait until all those federal partners have signed that MOA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then once they have, we'd like to look at the reporting changes to it, you know, before we try to integrate.
Good. All right, committee, any action on this particular federal?
Motion to report. Section number is not in front of me.
Motion to report section 3 of ONCA 2294 as reviewed and approved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay, the next session or section is the Tsiwazupi program, CSBG.
Okay. So the formal name for this funding stream is the Community Services Block Grant. The Osage Nations adopted a name for the program, and that's Tsiwazupi. So that is Wajaji term for an active, healthy family or a home. So our intended purposes for this funding stream is to provide financial assistance to youth, and it is only youth. So when you have youth, and it's restricted to the Osage Reservation, Osage County, students that are attending public schools, and this provides financial means for them to participate in art initiatives, sports, after-school activities. It provides clothing, equipment, not supplies, because that is already offered through Johnson O'Malley, but we see a lot of sports activities, you know, so this allows them to have financial assistance to buy the uniforms or helmets or trips. We have some expenses for FHA, the ballet. We have a lot of students that participate with the Osage Ballet and they receive their financial assistance here. This program had some flexibilities during the first year of the pandemic, but have reverted back. And the income criteria is 125% of poverty guidelines, which is pretty low. But we have the flexibility in policy to apply standard deductions for tribal members so that those Osage families qualify. It's a small grant. It's only $44,000. It hasn't increased in quite some time. It's a block grant. So it is dependent on the president's bill. The only time we receive an increase, and it would be a small increase, is if there are reallocated funds at the end of a fiscal year. The admin cap is limited to 5%. So 5% of 44,000 is only a couple thousand dollars. It's got low admin, which you'll see the tribal request for some positions in there to pay those people that administer the program.
Any questions? If not, any movement?
Oh, and the data on that is for FY22, we assisted 88 families, which consisted of 246 youth. 78% enrolled Osage.
Good job.
Yeah, we're on section 9, correct?
With for 44,000, way to assist.
Motion to report section 9, Community Services Block Grant of ONCA 2294 as reviewed and approved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed,
yes.
Say no. Okay, motion passes. Let's move to the section 20, which is LIHEAP or Energy Assistance Program. Want to talk a little bit about that?
Okay, the LIHEAP program, this is an estimated $167,310 federal dollars. These funds come from the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Energy, for the administration of children and families. Our plan is to provide financial assistance for home energy assistance bills, energy bills, electric, natural gas, propane. It is restricted to Osage County, Osage Reservation. It is available for all Native American households. For FY22, we provided assistance to 304 households. That is 81% Osage. We also provided assistance to replace or repair HVAC systems for homeowners, and there was 24 of those projects. This program has a difficult admin formula. It allows 20% of the first 20,000 and then 10% of the remainder. It's pretty close to that amount every year. The estimated number here, 167. Again, we only get additional funds if they reallocate at the end of the fiscal year. And we haven't seen any more than 3,000 to 5,000 on top of that.
Any questions, committee? Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Kimball, you mentioned 24 HVACs were replaced in qualifying households of Osage members. Mm-hmm. So, I haven't had to use the program for a very, 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 very long time. And Congresswoman Redcorn has a bill currently. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it or not. I mean, you are a busy individual. I think her intention is for energy cost, to assist with energy cost for Osages. And I think it's nationwide. It's not a jurisdictional boundary. And so do you happen to know, and if you don't, I understand, a number of people that have applied that didn't qualify, and then based on the facts that we don't define our own low income guideline or middle income guideline, the other guidelines that you have to use for your LIHEAP program?
Can you state the question again?
Certainly. So do you have a large number of folks that don't qualify that do apply?
No. We have less than 8. When we ran annual reports, there was less than 8 people that were denied assistance. Most of them don't meet our criteria. Like, we couldn't verify that they were actually living in that household and that utility bill belonged to them. Or they had already exhausted benefits, because this funding stream is inclusive with DHS and the program that they offer there.
Okay, so you had 8 total, mm-hmm, that didn't qualify. Okay. So by saying that, have you had anybody, okay, so nobody has actually come to, that's been over income, in other words, that you can think of?
Very few. I can't think of anyone right now. We try our best to put that information out there, program flyers or something like that, so people can kind of ideal or estimate, you know, whether they qualify or not. You know, I will say that our eligibility determination is higher than the state of Oklahoma. So most entities throughout the state of Oklahoma use 125 to 150% of federal poverty guidelines. The Osage Nation adopted 60% of the state median, which is higher. And so that's one of the flexibilities from the funding agency. They give you 2 definitions, and you can adopt which one is more advantageous to your community. So we take 60% of state median. We also provide those income deductions for Osage members. We also use net instead of gross. So we we've tried to open it as much as we can, you know, the for the income eligibility determination factors anyway. Thank you.
So, and also in this program, you have to have a relationship with the utility companies. It's so important because especially in this area, most of our folks will come and their bills may be getting ready to get shut off, or it's, you know, extremely high. Our nation, this department has a really good rapport with the electric companies in our area, so that if we, you know, were to send them a promise to pay, then they acknowledge and they know that because we've developed a relationship with them, and they know that we're going to pay because, you know, we have to fall under the accounting standards. They've got so many weeks to do a payable and things of that nature. We don't have a designated accountant sitting there doing direct service for us. So we have to have this relationship with these utility companies to say, hey, we're Osage Nation and we promise to pay. Please don't cut this family off. And so I'll give you guys credit for that, developing that network with these utility companies, because if you reach out to any utility company that we don't know, they're gonna say, I don't know who you are. You don't have a credit or a rapport with me. A lot of companies do direct payment. I think, are we utilizing the direct pay, or are we still utilizing the
vendor pay only?
So each utility company is different. I think we experience that in our own utility. So it just depends. And so, again, I think you've done a really good job with the amount of federal dollars. Are you using any ARPA dollars right now for LIHEAP at all?
No.
Okay.
I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
You made me think of something. Somebody asked me a question, and it just came up, and Congresswoman Rebard, it triggered my memory. With the LIHEAP program, because you help pay for utilities, what does an individual do if they prepay? Do they qualify for the program? And can you tell me why or why not, or, you know, help me understand that.
Right now, they don't qualify for the program because the policy,
okay,
which can be revised, but the policy requires that they have already incurred the energy cost. So there's one vendor that comes to mind, Verdigris Valley. Mm-hmm. They allow some of their customers to be on a prepay status. Those customers go to DHS. DHS has a way to provide assistance without showing that the energy cost has been incurred.
So I don't understand how that works, because I don't do the prepay, of course, mm-hmm. but my assumption would be that they would base it on an average of what they energy that they used the prior year in the same month, and then what they used the last month, because
right.
I know that some of our folks, or some, I know some, I know of a family in Fairfax that they pay their energy bill based on an average. So they know their energy bill is the same every month, no matter what. So they don't have to have a higher cost in the summer and the winter. Mm-hmm. And so it's based on policy because I think we probably have a handful of folks that prepay because they don't have the money to put the deposit down mm-hmm. to pay for their, I'm assuming that's why they prepay is because they don't have the money to be able to pay for it. Because I had somebody reach out to me and they were like, I only have one day left on my, she was an Osage though. I'm related to her, but she was an Osage. Her grandma was adopted into our family, mm-hmm. and not Osage. But I was able to refer her to the CNAs that she is. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do the prepay either. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying, that was kind of like my first thing that I was like, I wonder why, because they're kind of in dire straits too, mm-hmm. you know, because they don't even have the money to put the deposit down, let alone mm-hmm. the cost incurred. So anyways, I just was wondering about that. Thank you.
I think that it's doable. It's definitely doable. It's one of those kind of policy decisions where you weigh whether it's needed and it's necessary, you know, or if you want to stick with what is verifiable energy cost. And in my experience, those that are on a prepay status aren't because they can't afford the deposit. It's because they have been previously turned off so many times. Yeah. And so the vendors put them at that status.
And also, I think this program also, it does takes care of heating and cooling. That needs to be mentioned. And so during the heating months, you know, of course, they're providing air conditioners. In the winter, they're helping with propane bills, gas bills, also winterizing materials. And with these dollars, you notice they mirror some of the state programs, just like TANF, LIHEAP. I think where we haven't got to this point yet, but at some point, we talked about the lobbyist, we have to have somebody at the state level arguing the funding that we get, because the feds send it down and then the state decides how much money we get. And we've never had anyone at that level, at the state level, arguing our needs. So here we are with this amount. And I think that your team does a great job in assisting as many folks as you can. And is this a program that you typically have unspent funds that you can carry over?
No, we won't this year. In the past, we've had maybe 10, they allow 10% carryover, the funding agency does. So we operate 90% obligated or expensed and carry over 10. This year, we won't be able to carry over 10. We've had an increase in applications because there's been an increase in utility cost.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. On top of those 304 households assisted, the program also provided two supplemental payments to these eligible households. So the program, eligible households can receive assistance once during the heating season, once during the cooling season. If they're elderly, disabled, or they have small children, they can also apply one more time for a crisis component. And then in FY22, those houses also received two supplementals, one in February and one in May. So we provided a lot of assistance to those eligible households this year. It's potentially five times. Yeah.
So before we get to that budget, just real quick, does Crisis offer any heating or cooling assistance through that program at all?
The tribal budget?
Mm-hmm.
The tribal budget does allow for utility assistance, but again, if they're eligible for federal, they'll go through the federal program first before we get there.
All right, just wanted to. Okay, any more questions from the committee? Any action?
Motion to report section 20. Thank you, Speaker. Of ONCA 2094. As reviewed and approved. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Sponsor Stabler. Yes. All of my sections, I believe, have been reviewed in 2294. Mm-hmm. Ma'am.
Ready to move it? That's what I was getting right there. Are you asking or telling?
Well, I can't make a motion, so.
The chair can entertain me. Motion to report.
Motion to report ONCA 2294 to Congress as reviewed and approved. Sections 3, Section 9, Section 20, Section 4, Section 14, Section 27, Section 31, Section 6, Section 7, Section 8, Section 15 and Section 16.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Chair. I have discussion. Yes, there was an amendment.
As amended.
Second.
Okay, Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay, let's go to ONCA 2295, Section 13, which is constituent services. Turn it over to you, Director Kimball.
Okay. This is an appropriation request in the amount of $237,022. This will fund the personnel and operations for the Constituent Services Office. We currently have 3 employees, 1 coordinator and 2 direct service caseworkers, as well as a portion of my salary. The director's salary is coming from this admin portion of the budget. This is also includes operating expenses. There are direct services here, but not in the form of dollars. So the constituent services team answers the phone to the main line. They're housed in the Welcome Center. They handle incoming calls or requests for information or needs for information or vendors. They're also the liaison for the health benefit card program, providing constituent services. They are also the center for regional gatherings when Osages meet. They also help administer the burial assistance program and the crisis program. Both of those programs are open and available to Osages everywhere. So a lot of their services are not tied to a dollar, but you know, internal and intangible direct services, I guess.
Thank you. Any questions for
Chair? I have just one, and it's just for clarification. I know the director's salary is a percentage, but the other wages for the coordinator and the caseworkers, are those 100%?
Yes, ma'am.
In here? Okay.
So in the other programs that she mentioned are, of course, revolving funds. Congresswoman Lemon?
Nobody has any further questions. I was going to move section 13. To report section 13 of ONCA 2295 has been reviewed and approved. Constituent services, sorry.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay, motion passes. The next section is section 25, which is the financial assistance services budget. This one, of course, is tribally funded with a little bit of salary. And as I really love, there's a lot of direct assistance. You want to talk about your financial assistance budget?
This is a tribal request for $713,807 tribal funds to administer tribally funded programs, in particular the crisis program. It includes some admin for wages and benefits, operating expenses. The increase you'll see is in direct services. So we felt the need to ask for more money this year. We have, for the last year and a half, we've been administering the Emergency Rental Assistance Program that was a federal resource that is going away on September the 30th. We have approximately $1 million in expenditures that we helped Osages throughout the country. So that resource is going away. That doesn't mean the need goes away, though. We feel that there has been an increase in these applications, but those people that are still struggling to keep their home are going to need another resource available to them. So we asked for additional funds here. There is a piece of that direct assistance that is for youth that $78,000 you see in that line, that is going to be, we want that to be available for Osage youth that don't qualify for the other programs so that we're not turning any Osage youth away.
So the amount here says zero for the youth services, but you're actually capturing those in the direct service line item.
Right, we're just not funding 50-40. All those funds will go into 56-70.
Okay. And does this also include your crisis assistance? Oh yes, crisis is almost 550,000.
That's correct. So in FY22, we had 200,000 available to us. We're asking for 550,000 to be available to us in FY23.
Okay. Yeah. Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you. Director Kimball, can you give me an example of a youth, like help me understand the youth that don't qualify for what other programs were you inferring?
Mm-hmm. It'll be the youth employment program. And we don't have many. You know, there's less than 20, but typically those are youth that are still under the age of 18, and they may have two working parents full-time. Maybe it's just two parents and that one child. They wouldn't qualify for federal funds. So this is how we're able to allow them to continue to participate in the program and earn their work experience here with these funds.
Okay, great, because my two oldest daughters could not participate, but my youngest daughter was able to participate, so mm-hmm. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Great.
So I have a question. So this is your last budget, but department-wide, including constituent services and the revolving funds, how many programs are you currently operating?
I believe in my program plan there was 16 different streams of funds. You know, a lot of those are in 477. And then, you know, some of those are not providing financial assistance directly from our office, like the health benefit card, but then to include regional gathering and youth, work experience, adult, community services, energy assistance, all those things. So
what do you think? And I know you well enough to know that your budget's presented as you see. Mm-hmm. What is your workload now versus your staffing?
We're pretty busy. You know, with 16 funding streams, every person on the team is responsible for a program themselves. We have mirrors, so we set up to train one another, so there's always a backup there, but everybody is busy full on with at least one program.
So you know what happened? Well, you know, when we did the cash assistance program, and now that's coming to an end, with I think we use it with the ARPA dollars. Did you have more staff at that time, or did you use the same amount of staff to implement that program?
We didn't have additional staff. We just added on to the existing staff. But for the record, the cash ARP program was outsourced to RT Consulting. So they actually accepted those applications and processed those payments, but we processed all the appeals and complaints and phone calls and things like that from that.
Was it the CARES? Did you do the CARES?
Yes,
okay,
CARES.
CARES. I apologize.
I was going to say that was with the second round, was
okay,
it not?
Right.
The first round, you all did the work.
Right. With CARES in 2020, that was this team
okay.
Here.
Yeah. Well, I know it makes the directors a little bit uncomfortable, so I'm not always. So you're good with staffing? And the reason I ask is that, you know, realistically, we have some direct service bills that are passed are going to come your way.
Do they include admin?
No. And so, and not that they couldn't. But I'm just saying that I want to ensure that to get the best assistance to our people at the level it could go. I don't know yet. It's new.
Well, I guess my comment is that if this body is going to appropriate more money to the financial assistance department, we plead that they also consider admin burden. upon the 12 that are there. So if there's already 16 programs or 16 avenues of financial assistance and there's only 12 people there, you know, a good model to follow is federal programs. They allow 20%, at least up to 20% for administrative uses. We're gonna need operating expenses, you know, we're gonna need paper and envelope and telephone money and all of those things, because it's there's already enough to do. You know, the health benefit program, that open enrollment is just right around the corner. We're already taking strides to train internally so that we can provide good customer service, you know, to our constituents. It's not that we're not open to more assistance. It's just that it will suffer somewhere else if we're concentrating on larger, bigger programs that don't provide admin.
Okay.
Well, I just didn't think it was fair if I didn't address it, because I don't know if you're familiar with the bills yet, but I just wanted to, I don't want you to be blindsided, your secretary, and but if they do pass, I would like the committee to at least, and the sponsor, to focus on that, so it's not a hardship and that it turns into something really good. And because you're going to have to also create policy, and that's hard to do, to get the intent if discussions haven't been had.
Right.
And so if we need to, if it gets to that point, that I would ask the secretary, I can have a committee meeting anytime. And if you need to, reach out and we can hold a committee meeting and start any kind of work that needs to be done, if you guys are open to it. I just want you to know this committee is very direct service assistant, like, we love that. And we've been here for some time. We understand, we get it.
Yeah.
And so we're open at any time. Just call me and say, could you please have a committee meeting? And we can do so.
Thank you.
Okay. Committee?
I have a comment real quick before we leave, because I think this is our last section. Just thank you, Andrea, really, because you are the director that everyone knows outside of the employees, the elected officials, the Osages that you serve. It's broad, right? Because we've made it broad. She's not just working with federal funding anymore. She's working with tribal dollars to assist people that don't qualify for the federal funding. Case in point, some of these bills or appropriations that may come your way. And you're servicing a lot of people, and not just within the boundaries, not just within the state, all across the world. People are, you know, eligible at this point to apply for things within your department. And so I thank you. Mm-hmm. I know the people thank you. I get a lot of comments on how efficient you all are, how professional your department is, your employees are, how people feel very comfortable speaking to you all. And they just really appreciate you, and you all need to know that.
Thank you. I'll pass that on to the team.
Yes, good. You have a great team. Yeah. They always put a smile on an Osage's face. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you. And I couldn't agree with Speaker Good Fox more. So there's a few bills out there that Congresswoman Rebar was referencing. And it would be three different, if I have my math right, which it could be way wrong, but there's a storm shelter bill to provide storm shelters for individuals. There's a bill for clothing, school clothing, and technical needs for school children.
And then there is an assistance for, it says, the intent is for energy assistance, I believe, for elders and disabled. Just those three alone is $2.5 million, I believe. Am I right now, as it sits, the appropriations? They're in government operations, Director Kimball. That, the school clothing and the energy assistance one. And I'll give you the numbers just so that you can. It's 2291 and 2292.
Also a disability assistance in equipment.
Which one is it?
Yeah, I read a bill that establishes a revolving fund and then another bill that furnish or that funds the revolving fund at $250,000. It had some interesting language to provide assistance of 50% of the purchase of medical equipment, something like that.
Okay, that's right. Anyway, just kind of that alone, you know, like, so it's easy for us to sit here and be like, oh, we want to fund this, we want to fund that, and then go do it, you know, but putting it into action is a totally different, you know, the side that we don't see at all. And fortunate that we have people that have worked on the Hill that are in offices down here that can, you know, that do sit in those offices, but still yet all that you do. And so I hope that you get to come to our government operations meeting when those, and I'm the vice chair of government operations, so if I would like to ask Congressman Keene if he would, when those bills are on for discussion, if you could come down or be available at least, so we could talk about the administration and the indirect costs that you're going to be incurring with those particular proposed laws, bills,
appropriations.
Thank you very much. Because I for us to really understand, you know, what we're asking our employees to, what more work are we asking them, and then what do you see possibly as a need for what Congresswoman Rivard mentioned, for possibly more employees, bodies to help administer these situations. And so, and you always give great percentages and you're easy to follow. So I hope that he can be, and I hope that when I visit with him to reach out to you.
Well, and also want to remind everybody, we say that where it was like, oh, you need a new person, two or three more people. That means three desks, three computers, three chairs, and there's actually a cost to that besides salary and fringe and IDC. It's space. So we need to take that into account as well. You guys are pretty, we know you've got this area in the Welcome Center, but well, I mean, you have to put people somewhere.
Right.
And it, but I'm just saying that's a fact. And space is the issue right now all over our government. And so, anyway. Okay, guys, any more questions for?
Motion to report section 25 of ONCA 2295 as reviewed and approved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say yes.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Sponsor Stabler, I have now completed all of my sections in 2295, ma'am.
No. And chair and committee, my last big motion for section 94 was just completely irrelevant. You still have sections of 94 and 95 on your Friday agenda.
Good job, Speaker and Caitlin. Yeah. Good job. Okay, so you want to withdraw your motion?
It doesn't need to be withdrawn.
It's just irrelevant.
It's just irrelevant. And so I'll make a motion to adjourn.
That's the second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Yes, and God bless.
What was the? Yeah. Do you still Storm shelter is 3 for 94 and 3 for 95. On Friday's agenda.